SBS کوردی روجنینی شش ایوار و روجن یکشمه دوی دونیورو یان گهلدانا برای اینترنت دما دخوازی.
Tim Buxton, welcome to SBS Radio and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
It's been 2 years since you've moved with your young family and wife, Sarah, to Kurdistan region in Iraq. I guess my first question would be, why would a father with a young family from Queensland make such a move?
Well, of course, you know, we recognize that as a family. We do things together and we're all in it, we're all on board. And those decisions, it took quite a long time. I first went in 2010 and floated the idea when I came back from what was like a scouting trip of assessing the needs in the area. And I came back and shared my wife, hey, would you consider of moving to the Kurdish region of Northern Iraq? Her first response was, no, not really. But like anything, you know, it takes time to understand and gain a truer perspective of maybe what a region is like. And most people think, you know, Iraq is all bombs and just, you know, terrorists and terrible things. And I think you would know just as well as anybody that that's not the full picture. And although there's a lot of bad things going on, there's some incredible, incredible people. And so for us, it was really important that we showed that our family is willing to come and serve. And I can't tell you how many doors have opened to us because we're there with our family. People just feel so, have warmed so much to us. I mean, when our kids walk into a house, they just steal the show, and it breaks down so many walls and barriers. You know, of course, we consider their safety of paramount importance. We're not certainly in a region where we're putting them at risk, so I know that's hard for people to maybe understand, but I always tell people, you know, you have to come and visit. You have to come and go before you jump to any conclusion.
You're working with Initiative Refugees Program. Could you tell us about the program and its involvements, please?
Yeah, so when we first got there, it was actually the day that ISIS invaded Kurdistan. So we actually went going there to primarily work with refugees, the organization. Where there is through World Orphans, and we were working with a community center project in a town called Saran, which is a couple of hours outside of Erbil in the mountain region, skirting the border with Turkey and Iran. And so when we got there, obviously the flood of refugees came our way, which we decided we need to make a swift transition in what we're doing to try and attend to some of the needs here. So pretty much within a few months, we founded this initiative called the Refuge Initiative. And it began just with taking in about 20 families that were in desperate need of shelter. We built for them a small little refugee camp. And then since then, we have built another five camps, or an additional total of five camps for now over 100 families, both Yazidi and Shabak refugees. So it kind of just came out of nowhere, and of course there's just so many, many more families that we need to start helping. There's just no end, it seems, to what's going on.
What's the difference between the refugee camps you build and that of the UN?
Well, of course, size is the major thing. A UN camp tends to be, anywhere from a few hundred families to several thousand families, and of that is often because they're, you know, an emergency response is put in place, and there's just so many people that need to be taken care of at once. But what happens is you have, you know, a lot of services that need to come in, and there's security issues. There's often health concerns. When an outbreak takes place, a health outbreak takes place, it can spread rapidly in those big camp environments. And you know, the atmosphere I've found going into many of them is just a sense of despair and depression, because they're just somewhat isolated from the rest of the community they're in. Contrast that to what we build is we really don't build anything larger than 20 to 25 homes in a region, in a camp, or what we call a micro camp. Basically, we realize that you can't really camp for 3-10 years, you know, you can't rebuild your life when you're in a camp. So what we've decided is skip the whole tent phase, and we go straight to building just a small little home. It's 5-meter living room space, their own separate kitchen, their own separate bathroom and shower facility. And what that does is that gives the family a sense of dignity. It only costs $5,200 US, so maybe 6,000 plus Australian dollars to build one home unit. But what we do is, because the camps are so small and most of the people are either relatives or they're grouped together and, you know, they're familiar with each other. And so those small units can operate independently. The camps run autonomously. There's no need for security. The social fabric of that community is able to operate. They're close to the amenities within the local community, so they integrate well into the community. We're now providing education for all the children at a school and our community centre facilities that we're building. The adults get local jobs within the community, so very much they're integrated into these semi-permanent, what we call micro camps or villages. There's no ongoing cost run the camps. I mean, if you look at a UN camp, they can cost upwards of several $100,000 a month just to maintain. We partner with the local government, so we have access to the local power and water grid. So everyone's kind of playing a part in making this happen.
Tim, what's your wife Sarah's role in all of this?
Well, we have three young children that are 5, 3, and 2. So she spends a lot of her time, obviously, taking care of them and looking after their needs. But at the same time, we have a very active life within our community, visiting families. We don't want to just be there, the Australian/American family that is just trying to solve everyone's problems over here. We really want to be part of the community. So she's very much involved with neighbours. And we actually host many, many people from either Australia, the US, Europe, that come through and volunteer and help with us, or are just looking for ways to help. And so I think we had almost 120 people stay overnight in our home within a one-year period. So she did a lot of hostings.
What is something that you'd like to share about the Kurdish people with others?
The Kurdish people are probably one of the most hospitable, generous, and I would even say forgiving people. There have been tremendous amounts of oppression and atrocity that they have suffered over countless decades, even centuries, and yet they're resilient even in the face of lack of recognition, even as a people group, not even having their own country, as I know is well documented. But, you know, you go and visit them. When I enter into the country and find out I'm an Australian, they give me a high five as I go through security, passport control. You go into the home and they just embrace you and love you. And in what they've done to embrace all the millions of refugees and IDPs that have flooded into their borders, because it's the only safe region in the Middle East, yet they have accepted them despite, you know, when they've had to flee, they had been very much persecuted in the places that they've gone, and they've not shown that in kind. They've shown forgiveness and hospitality that I don't think any other people group in the world have shown.
Tim Buxton, thank you for talking to us on SBS Radio, and all the best for the great work you do.
Thank you so much for the time.
SBS.
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 SBS Radio.